This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour director who has toured with artists such as Earth, Wind & Fire, Prince, Avicii, John Legend, Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, Fall Out Boy, and Toni Braxton, among many others. He is a co-host of Tour Management 101 and has been a featured speaker on a variety of panels at the TourLink Conference, IMFCon, The Hub at CAA in Nashville, the Leadership Music Panel, the University of Georgia Music Business Program, and the William Patterson University Music Business Program. In this episode, we talk about diversity in touring, managing and overcoming anger, and practical actions you can take to learn about and get into the music business. You can find him on Instagram at David51. Here is my conversation with the truly inspiring David51 Norman. Hi, 51. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited to talk about some of the topics that we've discussed before you hopped on. So it's going to be really great. I know some of your friends and some of the people that you work with TM101. So I think that's really fun. But could you start by telling us, everyone who's listening, a little bit of your story? What are some formative points that happened from when music was just a little light in your eye to where you are today? Because you've done some really awesome things.
I think one of the first memories that I had was I remember seeing a photo that my father took of me in the kitchen. I think I had to be like 1 or 2 years old, and I was at my mother's feet and I was banging on some pots and pans. And I was like, when I look at that picture, it's like, maybe I knew back then I was going to be a drummer. So as I got older, I was really into music. My father listened to a lot of music in our household. So he would listen to country and Western, classical, R&B, Motown. So we always had music going on in our house. And my mother, she played clarinet, piano, I believe tuba, and a little bit of drums also. So we always had music in our house. So when I was in high school, I played in the high school marching band and I played in the theater band. So during my years in junior high and high school, my father would have to drive me to auditions. I would go audition for like top 40 bands and stuff. And, you know, when I was like 13, 14. So since I couldn't drive, my father would drive me. So my father was like my first roadie. You know, he would help me load up my drums in the back of the pickup truck. And he would drive me to auditions. And then he would like just stay in the truck and read his newspaper until the audition was over and help me load up my drums, come back home. So after I graduated high school, the year before I graduated, I started playing in this kind of Rush cover band. It was a three-piece band. Our lead singer looked exactly like Geddy Lee. He had the Rickenbacker bass. He had the bass pedals. He had the mini Moog set up. And it was his brother who played guitar. So we played everything from like Ted Nugent to Rush to Led Zeppelin, King Crimson, Scorpions, a little bit of everything. So, and when I had turned 18, we were on the road and I got a phone call in my hotel room that my parents were in a car accident. So I had to drive back like 5 hours to the hospital. And during that 5-hour drive, I pretty much figured out that my parents were gone because they wouldn't give me any information on the phone. So I got back after the 5-hour drive, and sure enough, my parents were gone. And I had on an uncle who were also in the car accident. And my uncle actually was the executor of my parents' will. So he was in the hospital for like 3 months. And I come from a military family. My father had retired. So while my uncle was in the hospital, you know, a lot of the military families kind of banded around me and kind of helped me get my parents' affairs in order, you know, find out, you know, all their VA stuff, their last will and testament, all that stuff. And, you know, I kind of helped my uncle, you know, I'd bring it to him along with our attorney to kind of like fill out paperwork. Cause it was just my sister and myself. My sister always went on the trips with my parents. So this is the one time that they didn't go on a trip. So it was almost fate that she didn't go. So with the inheritance that was left to my sister and myself, my portion, I decided I still want to be in music, but I pretty much had to quit the band because for like 7-8 months I was dealing with the aftermath of the accident. So I wanted to stay in music, but I didn't want to play drums anymore. I completely, in a way, kind of felt guilty that I was on the road when this accident happened. But I bought a recording studio and found a person to help me engineer and mix, and he helped me build it and buy all the gear and stuff. And one of the groups that got signed to that was recording at my studio got signed to a major deal. And so when they went on the road, they asked me if I would come out and mix for them. And I said, sure. And then it was, hey, since you're an ex-drummer, do you mind setting up the drum kit? Okay. Do you mind driving? Okay. Can you set up the bass rig? Okay. Can you help set up the guitar rig? So then I was the all encompassing, the all guys. So then it was, and they were from a small town. So it was, hey, could you also book the hotels for us and flights for us? Okay. Cause you know, in the military family, you move quite a bit. So I was kind of used to all that stuff. So it went from that. And then we were on the road and they were opening for a major band, and the tour manager of the major headlining band just happened to notice me. And she's actually one of my mentors still to this day. Her name's Karen Krattinger. She's worked with everyone from Prince to the Dixie Chicks to several other people. And Karen came to me and she says, hey, look, I've kind of noticed you. Would you be willing to take a step up? Because I'm leaving to go work with Prince. And I was like, let's see, I'm doing 12 jobs and driving. You guys are on a tour bus and I'd only have to tour manage and mix. Yes, I would definitely be interested. So she kind of introduced me to the band and I kind of let my guys know that I was going to take this jump. And so Karen said, after I leave, you can call me for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, you have to sink or swim. And so for 2 weeks, I called her. And then the last phone call, she said, all right, well, good luck. I'm on to my next thing with Prince. You know, he's a handful. So it is what it is. You're going to have to do what you have to do. So it just kind of snowballed from there. After that group, I went and worked with a couple of other groups here in Atlanta. And I was still a studio engineer up here in Atlanta at a couple of recording studios. And so a lot of people would hire me more so for my mixing ability, but I think that I was gaining more and more interest of wanting to tour manage, because I like tour managing and production manager. To me, it's kind of like putting together a puzzle, but you have to also deal with all the different elements, you know, personalities, people's agendas, all the technical stuff. So that's how it kind of snowballed. But I didn't want to limit myself to just working with R&B music. I always wanted to do rock, jazz, country, because I think it makes you more well-rounded as a touring person. So that's my story.
Well, and that's what you grew up on, you know, so You liked it all, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so cool. So I love that sink or swim thing, because as harsh as it seems, sometimes it's exactly what you need, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really, really is. And I'm still learning stuff today. You know, it's on our Tour Manager 101 panel, I'm the oldest person on there, but I've learned so much from Henry, Mary Jo, Mark, Doug, Adrian. So because, you know, as you're older, you're kind of set in your ways of doing things. But younger people bring you that life and that energy, and they have more of the social media skills. So I think that they're learning from me because I have the experience, but I'm learning from them also because they also have new and different ways of doing things, and especially with technology. So
I wouldn't have guessed that because your website is pretty amazing. So oh, thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh man. So that's interesting that basically you were able to learn a lot of the different jobs just because it was necessary. And I feel like that is a theme that I've noticed in the industry. It's kind of like, you know, people need lots of things and you kind of just figure it out as you go and then mm-hmm. you become good at it. And then, but what is it? So you said about tour managing in particular, you really like the putting the puzzle together, but it's also mm-hmm. very much of a people-centered job, correct?
Yep. Dealing with all the different personalities and everything.
Yeah. And so, you know, and so that's interesting because some people really don't like managing people basically. And some people do. And when it comes to managing people, you get a firsthand look at what happens when you mix different personalities together. And how is it that you're able to, and what have you done in the past and what have you learned when it comes to putting together a team? And what are the important pieces that you like to think of when you start choosing teams?
I kind of want it to be an extension of myself because I'm pretty quiet. I'm an introvert. I like listening and observing more so than speaking. But I think it's also, I always like to have a mix of older and younger people and also a mixture of people of color and women, because I think that it makes everything a little bit, I don't want to say more well-rounded, but not only well-rounded, but diverse also, because you're getting all of these different aspects and people's different journeys and everything. But I've also noticed that a lot of times that I get called on tours to replace somebody. So the camps that are really good is usually top down from the artist on down to the rest of their staff. And if the artist is kind of laid back and mellow and takes care of their people, you kind of see the tours more relaxed. Or if you get on tours where the artist is kind of tense and upset, and you notice that people are really tense on those tours. So I always try to hire people that are a little bit more mellow, laid back, and who don't mind pitching in to help out other people. Because I hate to see on tours where a department is finished with what they're doing and they see another department kind of struggling and we're falling behind schedule and they automatically go over and jump in to help out, because the whole thing is not about us. It's about getting the show up on time and making sure that the audience is happy and the artist is happy. You know, we might be stressed out and haven't slept for very long, but that's our job. We have to take care. We have to see the bigger picture. And I like people that are a bigger picture and who think are more long game thinking people than short game people. So I think that makes it more successful.
It's easy to put yourself in your silo and then, you know, feel like this is it, got my job done. I don't need to do anything else. But, mm-hmm. you know, you guys do have a project that you're working on every day and it needs to happen. So it is, you know, it's always nice to have team players on there. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about diversity on tour. So I know that's something, that's a subject that's really important to you. And I think it's a subject that's really important to our society right now as a whole, because I think people are trying to learn, people who have never thought about diversity are trying to learn more. And they're trying to figure out what is it that we can do to actually form a world with equity as opposed to, you know, just keep doing the same thing.
Well, I have found that I'm treasurer of a organization called Roadies of Color United. And it's an organization that was started by Lance Casey Jackson. He's stage manager on Earth, Wind & Fire, and Bill Reeves, who has tour managed everyone from Prince to Anthony Hamilton. And these guys formed this organization because every year, I don't know if you've heard of the Tour Link Conference, but I think it's now called Production something now, and the Polestar and Parnelli Awards, that it's very rare you see a person of color get nominated or even win. I mean, very. And the reason that we've heard is that a lot of those organizations don't know of many Black people. And, you know, and our response is there's tons of us out there. You know, I've been in the business over 35 years. Casey and Bill have been in the game for 30, 40 years themselves. So how can you say you don't know any? And how come you don't know any is because you don't really look. So they started this organization to kind of represent our own. And what it is we had our first conference in February. And what it was, we had our own awards show, and it was all people of color. And it wasn't just Black people. You know, we had females, we had Hispanics, and we had our own panels, our own seminars to kind of address a lot of issues and figure out ways how we can get on some of those bigger tours. Because you see a lot of white people on Black and hip hop tours, you know, the big tours, but you don't see a lot of us on those big white tours. So it needs to kind of, we kind of need to bridge the gap to let ourselves get ourselves out there a little bit more. And so Roadies of Color was started for that reason. And then there's several other organizations that have come about since the pandemic and the George Floyd incident. And the other thing for me personally, I'm usually the only or one of very few people of color on certain tours, because I do rock tours, I do jazz tours, I do country tours. So, and one of the things that I find is when I'm on those tours and I get off the bus first thing in the morning, they say, "Hey, are you the bus driver? Are you the truck driver? Are you the security person?" "No, I'm the tour manager." And usually it's, "No, really, where is the tour manager?" I'm like, "I'm the tour manager." So
wow.
I kind of want to erase that stigma, because if it was a Black tour and a white guy got off the bus in the morning, they are automatically going to go to that white person and say, "You must be the tour manager." They don't think someone else could be the tour manager on a predominantly white or country tour. So I kind of want to erase that stigma. That's just me personally.
I can totally see how that happens. You know, people, it's this whole thing with stereotypes. You know, it's like you imagine a Black person being a certain way. You imagine a Hispanic person being a certain way. Like so my history is a little bit strange because I'm a Mexican immigrant. I was born in Mexico City, but I was born with like red hair and light skin. And, you know, in Mexico, it's interesting that even within a family, when you have lighter skin and you have lighter hair, you're actually treated better than the rest of your family. And it actually happened. It happened with like my little brother. He has darker skin. He gets a really amazing tan where like I just burn a little bit. and he has dark hair and everything. And, you know, I noticed even from when I was little, you know, that he was treated differently than I was, or really that I was treated differently because I looked different. Mm-hmm. And that was a really strange thing to realize, because, you know, now listening to these conversations about racism and things, you know, I start to question myself and I start to wonder, well, you know, what white privilege am I actually receiving just by looking a little bit lighter and having, you know, and it definitely is something that I think needs to be discussed, and people need to recognize that it happens in everywhere in this world, within, you know, cultures that you wouldn't think, that the average person wouldn't think so. And so I do think it's a really important conversation. And one of the things that I know helps people that I've experienced that helps people see is, you know, teaching Spanish. You know, I talk about different cultures and things like that. And I remember when during the midterms, when a bunch of women of color, they were voted into Congress, I told my students, I was like, "Look at this picture. You're seeing pictures of people who look totally different from each other. And you're seeing pictures of women and men. And you're seeing diversity here." Mm-hmm. And this is new, because our representatives don't always look like us. And so, you know, being aware and actually being able to see it and showing it to people, showing them where there's examples of diversity, I think is really important.
Definitely.
So what can we do one-on-one? So if I'm a tour manager, or if I'm a parent of somebody who, you know, is into music or something like that, you know, like how can I make sure that I give them the good opportunity when I may not think that there is one?
I think you have to start early. And by early, I mean like junior high or even high school, getting them involved in the music programs. Once they're in college, getting them involved in the concert department at those colleges. Even while they're in college, having them intern or volunteer at a local promoter or local agent to learn, to see how a show gets put together. One of the things that I've seen a lot of high school students and college students do now is they will watch these different webinars and different podcasts and actually reach out and say, hey, I'm at this such and such university. I would love to be able to pick your brain. You know, is this okay? And I tell, because I do a lot of speeches at some different colleges and universities also. And I tell students that don't be afraid to reach out to people, because what's the worst thing they could say is no, or they could ghost you. But who's to say if they just turn around and say, oh, absolutely, I would pick my brain, whatever's left of it, because you don't learn if you don't ask. And there's no such thing as a stupid question, because again, if you don't ask, you don't know. So I tell people, feel free to reach out, because when I was first starting out, I had my mentors that I looked up to, and I reached out. And, you know, this is days before email, so I know I'm definitely showing my age. So, you know, I'd physically write a letter, and I will relate a story to you. Years ago, two of my people that I really looked up to, I really wanted to meet, was a gentleman named Patrick Stansfield. He used to tour manage Barbara Streisand, Neil Diamond, all of those people. He was probably one of the most amazing men that I ever met. And I was in Los Angeles, and I just happened to have a friend who was working on the tour. And I said, hey, do you think that you could put in a word for me that I can meet Patrick? And she said, sure. And Patrick called me and he says, hey, you want to meet me at a bar tonight for a drink? And you can just pick my brain as long as you want. And I was like, are you serious? And so I met him at the bar, and we talked for like 2.5 hours. And he just let me ask. He said, just ask away, whatever you want to know. And I said, at the end of it, I said, there's someone else that I would like to meet. And I know that you've worked with him in the past. And this guy named Marty Hom. And Marty Hom tour manages like Fleetwood Mac, Janet Jackson. He's getting ready to do the Stones. And he says, oh, well, hold on a second. He called Marty on the phone and says, hey, Marty, I've got this young man here who wants to learn about tour managing. He would like to meet you. Are you free tomorrow? And Marty said, sure, tell him to meet me here for breakfast. I was like, holy shit, I got to meet two of my mentors in the span of one weekend. And the next morning I met Marty at breakfast, and he let me pick his brain. And I still talk to Marty to this day. So if you don't ask, you don't know. So don't feel definitely reach out to people that you want to speak with, because the worst thing they could say, like I said, is no.
Yeah, it's funny because, sorry, that's my son running through the house because I told him I had an interview. But no, it really is. And actually, that's something that I do tell my son too. I'm like, it's always worth asking. The worst thing that could happen is you get a no. And there was a time when he wanted to be an actor. He doesn't want to be an actor anymore. But there was a time when he did. And the main thing that I think I learned from just like reading all the books and like whatever, it was like, you have to collect your 50 no's before you get a yes. Mm. And so that kind of stuck with me as far as like, you know, just how the way I live my life. And I feel like the more that you get no's, the less that it hurts you. And so the more that you're just willing to go for it.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. So what about when you get a lot of no's from your artists? What about when they're really difficult?
Well, here's I get to ask this question a lot. So an artist never wants to hear the word no, ever. So One of the things that I picked up from touring in Japan quite a bit, because there's technically no word for no in the language of Japanese. So one of the things that they taught me was, let me do some research on that and I'll get back to you. Or I use the, I think so, maybe. So you're not saying yes, you're not saying no. But if you say, let me do some research and I'll come back to you, that usually puts an artist at ease. Now, I have worked with some artists that kind of give you the look, like, nah, I need an answer right now. But you said, but in order to come to a proper decision on this, I should do some research because I don't want to speak out of turn. So just give me a few minutes and I'll come back with an answer for you. So you are going to have some difficult artists that don't want to hear no, they don't want to hear an excuse. And you have to tell them, okay, if we go down this path, this is going to be the ramifications and this is going to be the consequences. So if you're okay with that, we can move forward. But if you give them the ramifications and the consequences, it kind of makes them think that, well, maybe this isn't the right approach. So maybe you as tour manager, you come up with a solution, you bring it to the artist and let the artist say yes or no. So, and I have dealt with many difficult artists.
It's that kind of giving them a little bit of ownership over mm-hmm. what's happening, because I feel like people, and I mean, I don't like to hear the word no. So I know if I'm reflecting on that, I guess I could say that it's probably because I feel out of control. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so I guess if we're cognizant of that and we try to smooth that out in the way that the Japanese do, that's really interesting. I love that. Mm-hmm. Was there any time where, you know, things didn't work out, like you couldn't handle it? And sometimes you just have to, you know, you just have to part ways. What happens then?
I think by the time it gets to the point of your parting ways, it's pretty evident between you and that act or that artist that either they are unhappy with you or you're unhappy with them. And it's just better overall if you guys just go your separate ways. But I try to pride myself on, if I do go a separate way, to not never burn a bridge ever, because you never know, that person might need you again or you might need them. You might go work for another act and you might need a favor from your previous act. So never ever burn a bridge. But I think that a lot of times personalities don't mesh. And when personalities don't mesh, you kind of have to do what's right for you and do what's right for the artist. So, I mean, I've been fired before, you know, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for not good reasons. But, you know, I'm a human being and sometimes I take it personally. You know, did I do something wrong? But you kind of have to make that kind of like a learning lesson. It's just like raising a child or raising an animal. The way that you treat them is the way that they're going to be brought up. So if you treat someone poorly, of course, they're going to be a little salty or a little have anger issues, I would say. Because years ago, I know I used to have anger issues. But I think that you just kind of have to, you just know when it's time to leave. And
so how do you get there? Because you said that, you know, there clearly was a transition and there was growth that happened. So tell me a little bit about that.
Let me see. I would say the last group that I was with them for almost 3 years. And so when I got let go, I did not see it coming whatsoever. You know, the prior week I was in meetings with all the powers that be, you know, the head of the record label, management, the attorney, the international agent, the US agent, was flown to LA, had meetings with them in LA. And then 2 days later, I get a call, hey, we're going to make a change. And you're one of the changes. So it's like, did not see it coming at all. Completely clueless. And my first thing, because I'm also a tour accountant, is my reputation. You know, I was worried about that. Did they think that I did something nefarious, you know, steal money or anything? And it wasn't that, but it got to the point of where our personalities were going on two different paths. So I just had to kind of suck it up. And I said, oh, you know, it's no big deal. I'll get another gig in 2 weeks. 2 weeks came 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. I was like, I've never been out of work this long. And then I was going to South America with an artist, and then the pandemic hit. And then, you know, depression sits in. And then we have the riots that were going on. So you just feel like everything's just, it's almost soul crushing in a way, but you get through it. You know, I've been home since January 9th. This is the longest I have ever been home in my entire career, ever. And I am going batshit crazy right now.
Oh man. Yeah, no, you're totally right. It is. It's one thing after another, after mm-hmm. another, after another. And, you know, how do you handle it? Because I think what I did is I let myself feel, I cried and I let myself be scared and I let myself feel that way for a while. And then it slowly started feeling better. But did you let yourself feel upset?
I did. And I have some very close friends who I vented to. And, you know, for me, it was, well, wait a minute. It's kind of nice being home. I get to sleep in my own bed for a change. I can walk my dogs two or three times a day. I can get in my swimming pool. I can go play my drum kit. I can go do this. I can go do that. I can do webinars. I can do podcasts. I can write. I used to write for several magazines. I can start writing again. Hey, I can read a book. You know, so it does have its good things of making that transition from being off the road, but I'm ready to get back on the road. I miss it.
Yeah, no, I've been like always posting on my Instagram. I'm like, please, I just want live music back. Just wear a mask. I tell my students too, like I made a video yesterday and I'm just like, just stay home, be safe. Don't let your parents go out. Don't let your grandparents go out. Oh man. So but I'm really interested in what you said a little bit ago. You said that you were angry at one point. So I'm curious to see how it is that you were able to grow as a person so that you could learn how to handle these things. Because, you know, the advice that you're giving and the way that you're talking about it, it seems like it's something that is really built into you now. Mm-hmm. So what happened before? How did you get there?
You mean from going from being angry to kind of like chilling out?
Yeah. How'd that happen?
Talking to like my very close friends and venting, you know, it's like having therapy. And, you know, one of my good friends, she said, you know what, you have the right to be angry, you know, let it out, be pissed off, be angry, but you're going to get to a point of where being pissed off and angry is not going to do anything to you other than give you an ulcer. So do stuff. You know, do those little projects around the house, go walk the dogs, go ride your bike, do these things to kind of take your mind off of it. And then she says, you know, if you're hurt, it's going to eventually go away. So be pissed off, be angry, get it out and move on. And basically what she was saying, you know, suck it up.
Suck it up, cupcake.
Yeah, put on your big boy pants.
Oh, and so you were able to put it to practice, you know, during this pandemic, but mm-hmm. I'm curious to know about, you know, in the journey of 5-1, was he always this level-headed guy who just, no. You know, who just sucked it up?
No.
Like, then tell me how that changed.
I used to be, my parents used to say I didn't suffer fools lightly. So when I'm on a tour, I try to give everyone all the information that they need to make the tour go smoothly. So before the tour starts, you shouldn't have to ask me any questions. So it used to be if people would ask me a stupid question, like I'll give you an example, day sheet. I'd email you the day sheet. Our tour coordinator would put it on your bunk. And then sometimes at the hotel, slide it into your hotel door. Don't come to me the next day and say, hey, what are we doing today? Did you read your day sheet? No. Well, why don't you read your day sheet? Well, I'm here. Why don't you just tell me since I'm here? No, I took all the time to put all that together. Why don't you just read it? And then it would become an argument of, Well, I'm standing right here in front of you. Tell me. So it would be little small, stupid things like that that would drive me crazy. And then sometimes you're on a tour where you're doing 5, 6, sometimes 9 shows in a row, and you're tired. You just want to like get on with it. And having these things come about that you just, of course, you're going to be cranky after a while. You're not sleeping. You're not eating well. You're not on a regular schedule. So I do remember I was in Canada and our wardrobe lady did something really, really bad. And it swept through the entire tour, the negativity. And we were loading out and she said something to me. And I would remember I was walking towards the bus with a gallon of milk in my hand. She said something really catty to me. And I just remember turning around. I just hurled this gallon of milk at her. And my best friend, Katie, was there. She actually saw it. And she said, you know what, 5-1, you need to get help. And so I went to therapy. And I mean, I was having some other issues. I had never really addressed the issues of losing my parents when I was 18. So I had all that stuff that was building and building and building and dealing with, you know, a very stressful job. And so I went to therapy and that really, really helped because I had a chance to really address a lot of things, not only about my parents, but about my job, about me personally. And one of the things that really helped me with therapy was my therapist said, you know, it's almost like AA, we're going to have a 12-step program and you need to do all 12 steps. And one of the 12 steps was all of the people that I've ever insulted, pissed off, did something bad against them, you need to find those people and apologize. And I was like, that's a lot of people. And she says, well, you've got nothing but time. And I literally made a list of people that I'd done that to and went down the list and slowly crossed it off. There was only one person that I was unable to get in touch with. I did leave voice messages and emails and they never returned. So I just said, well, I did my due diligence and I made the effort. So I'm at peace. So therapy and having friends who recognize that you have issues, I think really kind of mellowed me out. And then I became a practicing Buddhist also. So I think that that's really helped me out quite a bit also.
I love that. And actually, you know, you just made me realize that I sort of did that a couple years ago. Because yeah, it's like once you set your mind to feel better and to be a better person, mm-hmm. it's like you have to do that. You kind of have to confront all of those tensions that you have in your life and just let them go. But the best way, it really is. It's just like apologizing. And mm-hmm. I did that. Like I did that with a friend. I did it, you know, with some people that I dated. I had a problem with ghosting people because. Mm-hmm. Immaturity. And
it's difficult to do, to make the apology, but after you do it, you feel so much better. It's kind of like the valve being released a little bit.
That's exactly what it is. And I think it's like, once you're able to apologize, it's like the narcissistic part of you just kind of isn't that big of a deal anymore. Like it's mm-hmm. not really a thing. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. So what are some other things that you learned through your 12-step program?
just to kind of let things go. And if you do make a mistake, especially if you're dealing with an artist, own up to it. You know, just say, hey, look, I messed up. I totally admit that I messed up. Don't try to pawn it off on someone else or come up with some lame excuse. You know, just like, hey, I messed up. You know, it'll never happen again. For me, it's a learning lesson. So I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Just move on. So.
But yeah, that accountability, you know, it's like once you apologize, it's like we're probably the hardest on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And once you're willing to just accept that you didn't know all the answers and maybe you could have done things differently and maybe you're not right all the time, mm-hmm. it just takes the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree.
I'm really interested in hearing kind of what you think the world is going to look like for the touring world is going to look like, you know, in the near future. Is there any hopes that you have for it?
I think it's going to be a long time before we get to the old days of like going to a festival. I think that's going to be a long time coming, because until we have a vaccine, and even once we have a vaccine, not everyone's going to take it, because you see in our political climate right now, and until we have clear leadership to kind of help guide this nation on what we really need to do, I think it's going to be a long time coming. But moving past that, I really hope that we can kind of get back to the old days. Every pandemic that we've had previously, we've gotten through, you know, the swine flu, Ebola, AIDS, Spanish flu, you know, eons ago. We've always gotten through it, but I think it's going to be a long time coming. So I do hope that we are able to get back to those days. But I think in the interim, people are going to still concentrate on doing these drive-in concerts and live streaming and stuff. And I think it's going to be a while before we can get back to real touring, unfortunately.
So the drive-in concerts, those are interesting. Have you heard about people starting to do a little bit more of that?
Oh, yeah. Live Nation announced that they've done a partnership with, I believe, the city of Toronto, I think, I could be wrong, about doing a drive-in concert series. And there's been several artists who've done some. Chase Rice did one.
Doug Wilson did say
yeah,
that.
He's actually doing one tonight, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. That is, what's tonight? Tonight is the 13th. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
This is going to air a little bit after the 13th, but
yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see how that goes. Do you think that the communication, because I feel like because of the internet and things like that and Instagram, everybody kind of is able to have more access to each other. So are you seeing that in the world, in the touring world, where like you guys are giving each other a heads up on what's going on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You see it, people on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. People are definitely talking about the different things to do. And artists right now are trying to find different revenue streams because, you know, with the advent of record companies not really providing royalties like they used to in the old days, you know, I would say 85 to 90% of an artist's income is via touring. So an artist is having to come up with different avenue streams. So that's why I think that you're seeing these live stream things and these trying to do these drive-in concerts, because that's the only game in town right now for income for a lot of these artists.
Yeah. Are you involved in any organizations where they help people who tour?
Roadies of Color United, mm-hmm. Showmaker Symposium with Jim Digby and Jen Kellogg. I was asked to be on the board and I accepted it for this organization called Well Done. And Well Done is an organization that helps provide a monthly stipend for college students who are doing internships. Because, you know, when you're a college student and you're doing an intern, you already don't have a whole lot of money going to college. So Well Done is an organization that helps provide a monthly stipend to kind of help that college student pay some extra bills while they're doing these internships. And then I'm on another board. So Live From Nowhere, I help read through different emails and of people who've kind of submitted claims for grants. And so just this week, we started sending out our first few checks to people who need help. So, and Roadies of Color also has a GoFundMe thing that they're doing, and they are going to start sending out checks to help some of us musicians also.
Oh, I did see that on LinkedIn. I think I shared it today.
Yeah.
So yeah. No problem. Yeah. That's really cool. I think it's nice that, you know, that people are actually, you know, creating organizations and trying to fundraise and help everyone. I mean, I wish that weren't the case that we needed it.
True.
But you know, I could go into that cause I'm a teacher. So, but, but I won't. But yeah, no, I mean, that's really great. So tell me, what are some of the things that you do your hobbies. You said you've been walking your dogs a lot. Have you always fit movement and like taking care of your mind, body, and spirit into it? I know you said you're Buddhist.
Body, not so much when I'm on tour, because I tend to put on lots of weight when I'm on tour because there's catering around all day and I like to nibble and I like to eat. So part of one of my other issues when I travel is I'm a foodie. I like to go try different foods, restaurants. I like, when I'm in different countries, I like to try the local fare. I don't want to go to like the tourist areas. I want to go to where like the locals eat. And one of the things that in my travels with my family, my father always says, look, just try it. You know, if you might not like it, but at least you made the effort to try it. And especially when you're eating foods in different cultures and stuff and people have you over to their house, you don't want to look at what they're eating and go, oh, that looks gross. I'm not eating that. You know, that's really disrespectful. Try it and put a smile on your face, even if it's horrible. But at least you made the effort to taste it. So, but since I've been home, my hobbies have been, you know, playing my drum kit, getting in the pool, walking the dogs. I love my dogs. Oh my gosh, I love my dogs so much.
What kind of dogs do you have?
They're all rescues. When I'm home, I volunteer at our local humane shelter. So I have a boxer, an Australian Kelpie, a Chihuahua, and just recently, as of like 6 weeks ago, a Shepherd mix puppy.
Oh, you just have four of them and they're different sizes.
Yep. And a turtle.
You have a turtle?
Yep. Also a rescue.
That's adorable. What's the turtle's name?
Turtle Man.
Turtle Man.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Why'd you name him Turtle Man?
He came with that name. The family that we got him from couldn't think of a name. So the kids just called him Turtle Man. I don't know if it's a male or female, but he answers to Turtle Man. So there you go.
I love it. I mean, what's in a name, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So, I mean, I think pets are obviously, you know, just people have them for emotional support. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're great. And I think when you're going through hard times, you know, what better way to get out of the house than to just take your dogs for a walk?
Yep. And that's good exercise too.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And so when you travel, you said you love trying new things and you aren't going to shun things. So what is the weirdest thing you've ever tried that you actually liked?
Cow tongue, I think, over in Japan.
Cow tongue's amazing. I've never had the Japanese kind, though. Tell me about it.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty much the same everywhere. The promoter in Japan, he had a dinner for the act that I was with, not knowing that the group was vegetarian. So I tried it and I was like, oh, it just tastes like beef. So it's not that bad. I've had alligator, which tastes like chicken or duck. So those are probably the two weirdest things I've ever had. I've always wanted to try scorpion, though. I've heard.
Where can you try scorpion?
Bangkok, Thailand. I see that it's kind of like street food.
Oh, so it's probably like fried or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, scorpion. It's probably really crunchy.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Tongue tacos are actually one of my favorites. When my son turned a year old, we had a party and we hired a couple to come make tacos. It kind of was like a little taco cart. Mm-hmm. And they had tongue tacos and the little kids were just eating it up. They loved it, but they had no idea that it was cow tongue. But it was because it's so tender mm-hmm. and flavorful. And it's just like a really good texture. So it's like, oh, it's so good. That's awesome. I'm like, let's talk about food forever. Have you checked out the Food on Tour podcast at all?
No.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm going to send it to you.
Yes, yeah. Please.
So Mike Robinson, he was on the show. He's a drummer and he started taking pictures of food while he was on tour and made an Instagram. And then he decided to turn it into a podcast.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You have to send me that, please.
I will. It's amazing. Oh my gosh. So we're almost out of time. Mm. So what I would like to know is there anything that you would like to share about how we can live a happier, healthier life when we're having a hard time?
Don't be afraid to talk about it. If you have a good friend, don't be scared to vent. Because if you keep that stuff in, it's just going to keep building and building and building. You're going to get ulcers like I used to do, because I would never talk about stuff. I would just keep it in, and then it would just build up, and then I would just have this huge explosion because I just didn't want to talk about stuff. So I think meditation is a great thing. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I can't shut my mind off. Well, that's not what meditation is about. Meditation is just about being in the moment and kind of just sitting there and just having your body relax and just focus. Of course, you're going to be thinking of stuff like, oh, I hear a bird over there, or I'm still pissed off from earlier. But, you know, it's just taking, basically, it's kind of like a timeout, you know, for your child. It's kind of like a timeout for yourself, meditating. I'd say yoga is a great thing. Stretching. I stretch all day. And I would say just go for a walk. Just chill out. You know, when you get to that point of where you just feel like you're just going to lose it, just go for a walk, because a walk will get your heart rate moving. It's great for your body. You're going to be out in fresh air, and then it'll kind of help you to relax and then come back to like I'm doing finger quotes, normal thinking again. So,
yeah, it's a nice reset. So you can clear your mind a little bit. And it's funny, because with meditation, people tend to think that it has to be this really rigid, you know, there's a step-by-step of how you're supposed to do it. But really it is, it's so hard to just sit with yourself for a minute. It's kind of like what Mr. Rogers used to do. He's like, hey, let's listen to what a minute sounds like. Oh, I love that. Well, 5-1, David, yes. 5-1. Thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me. You had such great advice and great stories. So I look forward to future conversations. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with David 5-1 Norman. 1. Diversity is important, and representation is also important. When putting together a team, do your best to get a good mix of people from different backgrounds and experiences. 2. Don't ever be afraid to ask. The worst that can happen is you get a no, but it's always worth a try. 3. Never burn a bridge. This goes for most things, but especially in the music industry, it really is a very small world, and your reputation is your resume. 4. You have the right to be angry. Be angry. Be pissed off. But then learn to let it go. If you're hurt, it's going to eventually go away. But do try to get help when you need it. Anger builds up over time, and therapy could be exactly what you need to heal. And 5, apologizing is difficult, but once you're able to apologize, the freedom you'll feel is priceless. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give David a follow on Instagram at David51. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.